football on off the ball.
Cleared football ultra under Mourinho during the classical wars when it was Mourinho versus Guardiola. There were few, if any, players who were more belligerent, more committed to the Mourinho cause than Arbeloa.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The news run on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. We're on your radio until 10 o'clock tonight, keeping you up to speed on everything that happens in tonight's Champions League action. And if the early games are anything to go by, it could be a hell of an evening. Manchester City are 3-1 down away to Bodo Glimt after 61 minutes. Three amazing goals, really, that have been scored by the Norwegian hosts here, which we'll get to very shortly. Manchester City, long story short, have been just as bad as they were on Saturday evening. Now, Ryan Cherki has just scored from the edge of the box with a very angry shot, annoyed with his teammates, annoyed with the situation, and maybe he's given them a bit of a lifeline. But 3-1 down, Pep Guardiola on screen right now, pretty irate with a refereeing decision, so loads to get stuck into there. Elsewhere in the show, it is a very busy night. 7:30, Jason Ryan is going to take a call. He is the Ballygunner manager. They won the All-Ireland on Sunday. They are the dominant team in Waterford Hurling and Munster Hurling, and it was his first year in charge, so it'll be interesting to get his experience, the pressure of taking Ballygunner on and eventually having that ultimate success on Sunday. From 8 o'clock, we're going to be speaking to Kevin O'Brien, the Ireland cricket legend, the hero of Bangalore in 2011. He's now involved with the Italian cricket setup. The T20 World Cup is on next month in India and Sri Lanka. Ireland are there, but he's going to be there as well. With Italy, they've qualified for the T20 for the first time ever. Ulton Dolan is going to join us that hour as well, the La Rochelle second row. We'll try and get some illumination on whether or not he's going to be coming back to Ireland anytime soon. And then on the football show between 9 and 10, Jonathan Wilson is going to join us to talk about a crazy AFCON final. Our number is 087-9180-180. Stephen Doyle and Michael McCarthy are here in studio, and I believe I took a glance at my laptop for a moment and I've missed further drama.
Early bath for Rodri.
Yeah, I hope Mick actually saw the incident, because I saw what
Guardiola was giving out about. It was a transition foul, wasn't it? So I presume it was
two yellows
in like Pacatá style.
Oh,
as in,
wow.
he just got them both in there, because I saw the first yellow come up on screen and he's obviously just got his second yellow moments later. So there must have been a
61
complaint.
And 62.
There you go.
Oh, wow. So just moaning.
It must have been.
God,
because
I love seeing lads get the second yellow for the complainer.
Being a mouse.
Rodri very much at fault for the third Bodo Glimt goal.
Oh,
as Bodo Glimt hit the crossbar. He was very much at fault for their third goal, gave away possession in midfield. It would be unbecoming of any Manchester City player, never mind a former Ballon d'Or winner. Even though they haven't been amazing all season, what the hell has happened since kickoff at lunchtime on Saturday to this team? Because this is clearly their two worst performances of the season by a distance.
Yeah, we talked about them a little bit on last night's show, but obviously the story was Manchester United, you know. But I was like, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I do feel like that the City hype train has been out of kilter all season. I haven't bought it. But I think you're right. I think what we've seen in the last two games is completely different. Now, the defensive trouble and what they're down to, I don't think any team could withstand. But I think how that manifests is the way you would expect is, say, last week when they were home to Brighton, or before the FA Cup when they were home to Brighton and they drew 1-1, and we kind of said, that's about par. There's not, you know, that it's going to be tough with these injuries to do much more than what they're doing. They're going to concede the odd chance. But how they've capitulated in the last two games is a completely different thing again.
Oh my God, Bodo Glimt has scored again. And he's offside.
But that's the second goal that's been ruled out for offside. They've hit the crossbar. They've dominated this game. And in fairness, we'll talk about City. I don't have a million things to say about Bodo Glimt, but I actually do want to leave with them. Me and Steve, we've been watching this game outside before we came in here for the last hour. They've been playing beautiful football. They've made idiots of City. You do have to exploit the fact that there's a calamity in the Manchester City defence, and they've done it brilliantly.
The other thing
they
as well,
played look, since it's, the last Champions League round in December.
Of course.
They're in an off-season here.
And look, I know they have taken big scalps, okay? So they're not, these guys aren't pushovers by any means, but they certainly should be a side that Manchester City should be dealing with without any major issues. That said, there's a couple of things there. It's an artificial surface. Now, I know Manchester City would have trained on an artificial surface in preparation for this game, and I saw something that would be too alien to them, but it does have an impact on these games, I think. You could even see one of the shots earlier on the show from behind the goal, and the ball doesn't run along the surface as it would on a grass pitch. It kind of skids. It's like, you know, when you skim a rock on the top of a lake, it kind of has that kind of effect. So the surface does have something to do with it. I know City are without their main defenders, Ruben Dias, and you know, you could throw Ake in there. He's on the bench, but obviously Vardiol is also out injured.
Yeah, and Stones, but look, and all.
Arsenal have had to deal with injuries to Saliba and Gabriel over the last kind of couple of years at different stages, and they have dealt with it. Granted, they might have better backup, but as well, for some reason, he's gone with a box midfield here tonight. Like, he started with a strong team. It's Donnarumma in goal. He's got essentially what is a back three of Kusanov, Alain and O'Reilly. Then Ait Nouri and Reinders were used as wing-backs. Then the box midfield, it was Rodri and Lewis at the base and Foden and Cherki further forward behind Haaland. And I just don't know if it was working for them, and I don't know why he persisted with it. It just gave... It opened up a lot of space for Bodø/Glimt to run into, and they've made taken huge advantage of it tonight.
And there's so much of that that's a part of a pattern recently with Manchester City. Even before last Saturday, the Phil Foden season had been one worth studying. One of the weirdest seasons ever. People talking about him as Manchester City's greatest ever footballer when he went on that 3 or 4 game run. Potential footballer of the year after that 3 or 4 game run. What did he score? Like 8 goals in 4 games or something like that. 2 goals a game. And then after that hasn't scored in maybe like 10 games. The weirdness.
Off really early. Exactly. That weekend. Yeah.
Also, we should say as well, subconsciously, what are the players thinking of Guardiola at the moment? Because we found out through Maresca that he was contacted about that City job as far back as October, November. And is Guardiola a lame duck now at this stage? Because, you know, we know that he's such a control freak as a manager, and he insists on the players following his instructions right to the letter. Now, if the players think this guy is going to be gone at the end of the season, you know, subconsciously, are they really taking on board everything they're being told to do?
Yeah.
Well, if that's the information that they have within the dressing room, now, of course, you do have Richard Keys coming out and being at the weekend saying he's going to be gone within the week. So I'm not sure, does that mean he's going to be there for another 2 years or what to read into that? But he says, do not rule out the fact that he's going to be gone in a week. So it does feel that there is a very live possibility that he won't be Manchester City manager at the start of next season.
Yeah. In terms of how much this affects, like, they can bounce back from this. They are currently fourth in the Champions League table. I was looking at the points earlier. It's very, very bunched. It's very unlikely that they'll come out of this round of fixtures in the top eight if and when they lose this game, as they will at this stage. But at the same time, they're home to Galatasaray next week when everybody plays. I think if they do get 3 points, they'll be close enough that someone will have to necessarily drop points, and they'll get back into the top eight and they'll get their week off, and then they're fine after that. There's no real difference between finishing first and eighth with how random the seeding, the positioning is below. So I think, you know, this isn't like the ultimate disaster by any means. I think it is important to note that they played a huge game on Saturday. And, you know, on the Tuesday early kickoff, they're in like the Arctic Circle, basically, you know, and with the artificial pitch and everything like that. So I think all of the points we're talking about are valid, but I don't know how beyond redemption they are.
Yeah, I know. The one other angle on this, which I know we're loath to point out, somebody's been in touch, I'm going to put them under the bus rather than ourselves. How much does this result take away from Manchester United at the weekend?
The first thing I thought of. I spent the entire show last night talking about how great Manchester United were, and honestly, it was with no bad feeling whatsoever. I thought it was one of those days that was good for football on Saturday. But you do have to start to think, if City are in this kind of free fall, then I'm not sure that they actually are. United did everything perfectly on Saturday, and I think that's more than anything what their fans will take from, is that their manager made intelligent decisions on their layout and how they attacked the game plan for the game, and the players reacted. They're the two things they would look for, whether they were playing Wolves or, you know, Accrington Stanley or Manchester. Well, it didn't really matter.
The next episode of that United soap opera will be live and off the ball this Sunday. I'll be there at the Emirates with Gary Breen.
Where Manchester United cannot play the same way as they did last week, and it won't come as natural to them to play as the way they did at Old Trafford. So
that's the next episode of
Arsenal 3 points. Don't worry, on.
The next episode of the Old Trafford soap opera is happening at Davos right now at the World Economic Forum. Let us not misguide ourselves about that.
Here we go. Coming in with the goss.
I've been going through your script, Stevo, and you have dropped the biggest story in the history of sport out of your script. You're starting with this Champions League nonsense when there is a rift between Brooklyn and David Beckham. How can you not be leading with this on a Tuesday night news round, Stevo?
Goss slot on OTB.
I mean, it's where all the big issues.
What's what's this got to do with Davos?
David Beckham is at Davos.
Is he? Yeah. As a speaker, like?
As a speaker, so he was...
well, he was booked to do that Squawk podcast, wasn't he, I believe?
Which he did.
So there's no... It's no way it's a coincidence that statement came out last night.
So if anybody wants an update, if anybody's, you know, been under a rock today, since people will know the statement came out last night, the events, as far as I'm aware, at Davos today involved two steps. So he arrives at the World Economic Forum, and then I think it's Paul Kelso maybe from Sky News, or there's at least a Sky News reporter there, following him, kind of like you'd have a new manager at Manchester United being followed by a Sky Sports news reporter being like, David, any comment? There is no comment. But then he goes on that podcast and he gives the most asinine and nondescript comments about protecting children and, you know, children make mistakes. And obviously my work through UNICEF has opened my eyes to how much help children... I got knighted for my work for UNICEF, actually. Did he know that? And look, I think children make mistakes and they need to have our sympathy. So he has looked for the moral high ground and he's clambering up it, but there was no specific references to his estranged son. Wow. So that's the latest. We'll keep you up to speed.
Can you imagine how angry Donald Trump is? Because, like, he's going to Davos thinking, I'm the star of the show here, and he's been absolutely usurped by a kid called Brooklyn.
Imagine that. Greenland's annexation, second in the news because of rift between Brooklyn and David Beckham. That is the world we live in.
Outside of all the salacious madness, which is unbelievable, and, like, I wouldn't be normally one for the, you know, celebrity gossip at all. Normally it annoys me that people are so into it, but not since it was Rebecca Vardy's account have I been so enthralled by an Instagram reveal. So, you know, it works. It's brilliant, right? But also, Steve-O, we're a little bit older than poor young Owen here. Not little, young, right? Poor young Owen here. Have you ever felt as old as Brooklyn Beckham, married Brooklyn Beckham in the world's most famous baby all those years ago? It doesn't feel like that long ago, does it?
Exactly what I was thinking earlier today. Unbelievable, isn't it?
I do remember Romeo being born. I'm not sure if my memory goes all the way back to Brooklyn.
One of the great days of my life.
Playgroup was hopping that day. Like the news just filtered through from home. It's like you get home and it's like 9/11. They turn on the news and it's like you'll never guess.
Like when Prince George was born on Sky News, you know.
Let us know your opinions on this. I will 100% read them out against my producer's wishes. 087-918-180 is our WhatsApp number.
No matter what you want to say, we'll read it out. Full immunity for one day.
The penultimate round of the Champions League is up and running, Steve, at the penultimate round of the group stage of the Champions League, I should say. So give us the news, what's happening, what are the standout fixtures?
Well, as I said, look, City went to Norway in search of some football healing ointment to rub into those wounds caused by Manchester United. However, Bodø Glimt have taken a handful of Norwegian sea salt and rubbed it right into those sores tonight. It's 3-1 with 74 minutes there on the clock to the Norwegians. Mark Gahey and Antoine Semenyo, of course, ineligible for the stage of the competition, but they can be added to the squad in the knockout stage. Tonight, the North London clubs are in action as well. Pretty straightforward for Arsenal. The Gunners are top of the table and the only club to have won all six matches in the tournament. They play Inter at the San Siro. Just 1 point from that game will get them into the last 16 with a game to spare. That's at home to Kairat. They were beaten comprehensively by Brugge earlier today, 4-1. That match between Arsenal and Inter kicks off at 8. At the same time, Tottenham entertain Borussia Dortmund. The Tottenham head coach Thomas Frank hoping to silence the boos at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Europe has offered the under pressure Danes some respite this season, as they've won 3 and drawn 2 so far, losing only to the reigning champions Paris Saint-Germain. Spurs are just 1 point off the top 8 automatic qualifiers. However, those boos and chants of "you're getting sacked" in the morning after the home defeat to West Ham has left everyone feeling pretty uncomfortable there. Frank wasn't sacked, as the chant suggested, but it was reported yesterday the club chiefs had met to discuss his future. He was asked ahead of the game if he could win back the fans, and he insisted he could because he has resilience. Frank explained that he listened to something recently that spelled out the three ingredients found in a resilient person such as he.
There's one, you have good values. I see myself as a guy that have pretty good values. Two, you know reality. And reality is 1 in 5 normally don't like you, no matter what you do. 1 in 5 love you, no matter what you do. Both of them probably biased either way, too much. Then there's the 3 in 5, that if you behave well, respectful, show integrity, do your best, normally they're swayed. So no matter what you do, reality, someone will not like you. So, but I keep doing what I do, what I believe in. And then the last bit, by the way, have perspective in life, which I have in abundance. So looking forward to the game tomorrow.
I love that really deep philosophical, you know, talk from Franklin at the end. Yeah. Looking forward to the game tomorrow at the end.
And also, perspective. You can't possibly tell the Tottenham fans that there are more important things in life than Tottenham Hotspur, otherwise they might turn on you even further. Manchester City are in the counter-attack here, Mick, but Bodø/Glimt's getting complacent.
Getting complacent. So they've taken off three players there, give them a rest for when their season starts. And, you know, they have a big game next week, I suppose, and then their season starts in a month or whatever it is. But no, you're mad. The forward who scored the first two goals, who I think we're going with Hoy, are we? Hoy?
Ho,
okay, as the pronunciation.
Sorry, it's Hoy, isn't it? No?
Oh, maybe it is Hoy. Informed Ho.
Anyway, he scored two good goals in the first half. I would encourage people, I don't know if we made enough of the calamity in the Manchester City defence, especially the second goal. I don't know if I've ever seen a player in open play that wasn't like, you know, that didn't beat an offside trap or whatever, be in such open space to score a goal. But he's done very well. This morning, it was reported that Norwich City, Championship strugglers, are in to get by this fella. And I'd say they're watching this tonight going, no! Don't score two goals against Man City in an absolutely dominant, famous Champions League performance. Norwich might be just slightly out of his reach now, all of a sudden.
Is it Chris Sutton on co-coms for this?
Might be, yeah. I recognise the voice. Yeah.
He was just saying before we came on air that he's now expecting Everton or Crystal Palace to become interested
in the striker.
He's jumped
up to that level, okay.
Yeah, he's 24 years of age, so he kind of feels like a player who's ready to kind of do his best stuff at the moment.
Top scorer in the Europa League last season? Did you say that earlier?
May well have been something like that. But this will be their first win in this season. Champions League, they've drawn three games. So 78 minutes there, it's at Bodø/Glimt 3. 10-man Manchester City 1. And I just saw the Rodri incident. It was two incidents within the space of a minute as opposed to one and remonstration. So maybe even more extraordinary that it happened so quickly. What have you got next, Evo?
So Liverpool, Mo Salah back training with the squad this afternoon. He will be available for that Champions League tie with Marseille tomorrow night. He returned to training for the first time after coming back from the Africa Cup of Nations where he was playing with Egypt. It looks like Ibrahima Konate may still be involved. He returned to France to attend to a family matter that was revealed by Arne Slot this evening. Something else he was asked in his press conference, I'm just seeing some quotes because he's speaking at the moment to the press. He was asked about the rumours about Xabi Alonso taking over the Liverpool job. Quote, he called me saying he was going to take over in 6 months. No. It's one of the strangest questions I've ever been asked. What do you say to that? So, yeah, I think he felt a bit odd that he was asked there. I've been working here for 18 months and I love my job here. We won the championship. This season has been tougher, that's obvious. The boos, yes, maybe I heard a few, but it wasn't much, and that's normal too. When you draw against Burnley, no one's happy, but when people got home, the emotions settled down. Maybe they thought that it was a bit too much. Meanwhile, Marseille boss Roberto De Zerbi dismissed questions in relation to the Manchester United head coach position, insisting he was fully focused on facing Liverpool.
Okay, we have news of a new appointment to the Ireland Women's National Team setup.
Yep, the FAI confirming the appointment of Gary Cronin to assist the head coach Carlo Ward. He previously managed the League of Ireland men's teams along for Tannan Brae Wanderers, while he also had a stint as an assistant with Bohemians. Cronin replaces Alan Mahan and will join Ward's backroom team ahead of the World Cup qualifiers, which start in March.
One of the things I hadn't quite considered before coming on air is, would the off-the-ball audience be pro-Brooklyn Beckham or anti-Brooklyn Beckham? One text has been in touch to say, Brooklyn Beckham would never have met his wife if not for his famous family. Maybe he should think before opening his mouth and remember the privileged position his family have put him in. So
who would Brooklyn Beckham be if he wasn't the Beckham? I'll tell you who he'd be. He'd be a failed QPR apprentice. That's who he'd be. In 2013, he joined Queen's Park Rangers as an apprentice. And little did I hear about Brooklyn Beckham's football career after that.
I mean, he made it, though. It's a good humble brag to say that you were inside an academy that definitely wasn't involved in any sort of nepotism. Completely on a different note here, Dermot Keenan says, watching Manchester City here, getting taught a lesson by Bodø/Glimt, I think Manchester United have broken them. So that's what we're saying.
That's a good way of putting it. That's a good spin. Yeah.
Very diplomatic there of you, Dermot. What have you got next for us, Steve? Where are we moving to?
Well, Katie Taylor has expressed her desire to finish her boxing career in front of a home crowd in Ireland. The undisputed super lightweight world champion has admitted that she'll probably retire this year, and she's not giving up hope of fighting at Croke Park. Taylor is currently on a break from the sport after successfully defending her titles against Amanda Serrano last July. Today she insisted she'd be up for the challenge of taking on the former UFC champion Ronda Rousey or a trilogy bout with Chantel Cameron. The 39-year-old reiterated her dream of bringing the curtain down at the home of the GAA when she spoke to Virgin Media.
Genuinely up for any challenge. Chantel Cameron, Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm, whoever it may be, I'm up for the challenge. And but the most important thing for me is to end my career here in Ireland in front of my my home crowd, and that for me to have a chance to fight here in Croke Park, for me it would be the icing on the cake.
Yeah, like didn't expect to see Katie Taylor involved in this event earlier. I wonder, not even in a cynical way, was there maybe some thought that it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world if there was imagery of you standing in a corporate box, standing at a premium level in Croke Park, looking out over the pitch and just giving people that mental image that you and the stadium can be in the one shot together.
Yeah.
And you know, sorry, I should say it was the Lidl lunch event, for the LGFA National League.
When we were listening, when you were thrown to the clip there, Steve, I was thinking, my God, I wonder has there ever been a longer running saga that's gone nowhere in Irish sport than will Katie fight in Croke Park? Because it does feel like it's a 3-time-a-year story, and we're nowhere closer than we ever have been to it actually happening. But when she's talking there, as so often happens when Katie talks, it's like you kind of listen to her and she sells it to me. And I think she would sell it to the country. I think it's almost a risk worth taking. It was like, but especially if she is saying, bring the curtain down. We say this is the last ever Katie Taylor fight. Are you telling me the country wouldn't go out for one of our greatest ever sports people? The pioneer of her entire sport, the best female boxer there's ever been. If we can't fill out Croke Park for that, we're a disgrace of a sporting country.
Well, just on that, so scepticism coming in from the listener. Just a quick one, lads. Can we all agree Katie won't sell Croke Park and the price she needs to sell tickets? All pie in the sky stuff.
See, the price of the tickets and all is, I don't know what it would be needed. Obviously, it is a very expensive
venue to rent.
Yeah, it's a very expensive venue to rent, and we're a very expensive country to put on events in, as people know. At the same time, I still think that there could be a campaign to do it. You know, I really do. I feel like there's an element of, like, this is Katie's last fight. I think it needs to be something like that. I don't think it's just going to be her next fight.
Yeah.
You know, as in, like, she's been champion. She's always been the best. So there's no one thing that we can say, right, this is the big fight. But I think her last fight, yeah, absolutely.
You say that there has never been a more long-running saga in Irish sport. On a completely unrelated note, Steve, what's your next story?
Well, the redevelopment work at the home of Antrim GAA will begin by the end of the month. It's 2 years since pre-enabling work took place at Casement Park, but a construction company will take possession of the site this Monday. It will carry out site preparation, followed by site clearance and the demolition of existing structures, including the main stand. The long stall works were boosted last week by the Northern Ireland Executive pledging additional funding for the rebuild.
I'm going to guess the next story. Championship restructures are back up for debate. In GAA, no? Okay, sorry.
Well, something that might excite some Irish rugby fans out there, because the French sports paper L'Equipe has described it as a huge double surprise. That is, claims that both Gael Ficou and Damien Penaud haven't been selected for the tournament by head coach Fabien Galthié. Bordeaux winger Penaud is Les Blues' leading try scorer of all time with 40, while Ficou captained France on last summer's tour to New Zealand. Galthié is set to reveal his 42-man squad tomorrow. Ireland meet France in Paris on Thursday fortnight. Andy Farrell will announce his squad tomorrow afternoon. The Scotland head coach Gregor Townsend called Van second row Johnny Gray and Bordeaux hooker Dave Cherry recall, I should say. Finn Russell will be involved in his 12th Six Nations campaign, which starts in early February away to Italy. While Wales boss Steve Tandy has included two uncapped players, Leicester's wing Gabriel Hamer-Webb and Bath centre Louis Hennessy. The back-to-back wooden spoon winners start their campaign away to England on the 7th of February.
Can you imagine how good France are if they can select the Six Nations squad without Damien Penaud and Gael Ficou?
Well, yeah.
How many caps would they have if they were from Ireland? You know, they'd never get out. They could lose their club place and still play for 3 years.
But also, I mean, maybe I'm kind of like leaning into the French stereotype here a little bit. This is like screaming alarm bells a little bit here for me. Like, surely as good as France are, you're not dropping Damien Penaud from your Six Nations squad.
Maybe they there just has have there has to
be
players.
There has to be a rift. It is France.
Okay, let's hope.
Like,
hope.
I just don't. I mean, they're not that good, surely. Like, we're talking a 42-man panel tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what. That's what.
Surely Damien Penaud's in the top 42 players in France.
Like, you know, surely. Like, I don't know.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem that it's injury related anyway.
You would think so. And, like, Intermac's out, isn't he? So, you know, there's, you know, possibly not full strength back line anyway, if nothing else.
They just don't need their 42 best players to brush aside a poorly Ireland in the first night of the Six Nations, obviously. You're sticking with the rugby, Steve-O. We've got some Munster contract extension news.
Yes, indeed. Back row Brian Gleeson has signed a 2-year extension with the province. The 21-year-old made his debut in 2023 and has gone on to make 26 appearances, scoring 2 tries. Gleeson missed a number of months due to an elbow injury this season, restricting him to just 7 appearances.
And then we have some Shane Lowry.
Yeah, Lowry has competed for the first time since that disappointment at the Dubai Invitational, chasing a first title since 2022. A double bogey on the last saw the 2019 Open champion finish 2 shots behind eventual winner Nacho Elviria. The Offaly man admits it still stings, but he's focusing on trying to contend at this week's Dubai Desert Classic.
What happened wasn't ideal. I was in a great position to win the tournament. I didn't win, and it is a tough one to take, but I think, you know, you need to learn from it and move on. After over 17 years in this game playing at this level, I think you're still learning every day and every week, and I'll use it hopefully going forward, and hopefully it's a sign of things to come for the year. You know, put myself in contention. I'd like to do that a lot this year, and obviously I want to get a win soon, but it didn't happen last week, and you never know, it might come this week.
It's happening for Yannick Sinner because his bid for a third straight title in Melbourne is up and running with a win at the Australian Open. The world number two was 2 sets up when his opponent Hugo Gaston retired injured. American Madison Keys started her women's title defence with a nervy victory. The 30-year-old eventually overcame Grand Slam debutante Alexandra Oleynikova 7-6, 6-1. Four-time Grand Slam winner Naomi Osaka battled through in 3 sets against Antonia Rusic.
Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for tonight's news round.
Football on Off the Ball.
Cleared Football Ultra under Mourinho during the Classical Wars when it was Mourinho versus Guardiola. There were few, if any, players who were more belligerent, more committed to the Mourinho cause than our below.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.